이런 게 있네 바다. 안녕하세요.
Good morning. My name is Natalie Buteau, and welcome to Talk Radio on this Friday. This is KBOO Portland 90.7. Today we have a special program for you. A couple weeks ago, I was surfing the net for events, as I'm known to do, and looking for, I believe it was the next upcoming Labyrinth Walk, and I happened to come across an event which is actually happening tonight in Portland, about transforming awareness, a dialogue with Robert Thurman and Michael Bernard Beckwith. And I thought, wow, I want to be at this event, reading the bios about these gentlemen and having heard about them before. And also I thought, well, how do we bring this to more listeners, and how do we bring this to you, KBOO, our listeners? So today I'm pleased to bring to you Heather Jones from Beyond Words Publishing, which is sponsoring the event tonight, and a little bit later in the program, Robert Thurman, who's one of the speakers of the event tonight. And of course, this is a call-in show, so you'll have an opportunity to call in and talk to either one of our guests today. So welcome to the program, and welcome Heather Jones.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we were listening actually to some music as an intro that will be played tonight. So tell us about that music.
Well, this beautiful Tibetan meditation music is being played by Nawang Ketchog. He is a former Tibetan Buddhist monk. He is a very good friend to the Dalai Lama. And his music is designed to inspire in people a sense of inner freedom and peace, and to assist in the meditation process. He also is an author, and he has written a book that Beyond Words is publishing, and it's called Awakening Kindness, and the Dalai Lama has generously written the introduction to his book.
Lovely. Now tell us, how did this event tonight come about, Transforming Awareness? From what I understand, it's unique. It's not a tour. It's something happening uniquely here in Portland.
That's right. Absolutely. There's one other time in history when Robert and Michael shared the stage, and that was in 2009 at the Sun Valley Wellness Festival. And when they were done with their talk, there was a standing ovation and a call for more. People were moved. So we hoped that filming the event was going to work out for us, but unfortunately the audio didn't work. So Cynthia Black, the president and editor and chief at Beyond Words, decided to bring them together once more because it was such a powerful and amazing evening. So that's what we've done. A little over a year later, we've brought both of them to Portland to recreate that event. And tonight we're going to be filming the event. And this time we'll get it right. And a DVD will be created from tonight's event and available for sale in November.
Right here in Portland.
That's right.
On the stage. And so let's tell you a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit about the speakers this evening. So Robert Thurman, a professor at Columbia University, a prolific author. He's the first American to have become a Tibetan Buddhist monk, co-founder of the Tibet House, along with Richard Gere. And he was formerly on Time Magazine's list of most influential Americans. Mm-hmm. And Michael Bernard Beckwith, some may know from The Secret, and he's the founder of the Agape International Spiritual Center, which does lots of great global humanitarian work, including building orphanages for children who've been harmed by or victims of AIDS and war and other tragedies. So, you know, two, you know, great leaders, and also he, again, another prolific author. And now both of them associated with Beyond Words?
Yes, yes. We've published books for both of these gentlemen. Robert, we've published Why the Dalai Lama Matters. And for Michael, we published Spiritual Liberation. Now, I'm so excited to see these two gentlemen share the stage because they're good friends and they're, of course, wonderful speakers. But to me, what's so interesting is that they come from different spiritual paths. Mm-hmm. And what we'll see tonight is where those paths interconnect. So, you know, Robert, of course, comes from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And Michael has really his own spiritual path that he has brought forth through himself. and he has 10,000 people around the world who are sharing in what he believes. I'm really excited to see Robert tonight. You know, he is one of the few non-Tibetan people living to have a close, long-standing relationship with the Dalai Lama. They've been good friends for 45 years. So Robert talks a lot in his book about his conversations with the Dalai Lama. And one point that interested me was how the Dalai Lama asked Robert so many questions about philosophy and politics. And Robert mentions that he thinks that he let the Dalai Lama down a little bit when it came to discussing science and whatnot, because his background is, of course, in English and literature. But that really close connection that Robert shares with the Dalai Lama, I think, is going to come out tonight. And then we'll also see how Michael's really close connection with the Great Spirit and what he calls forth comes out tonight. But really, there's one universal religion, and that's the religion of kindness. And I think that's one of the big points of connection that these two gentlemen will talk about tonight. And where do we find that kindness in our lives? And how can kindness literally transform the world? You know, Robert says we're at the moment on the planet when we either implement the ideals of gentleness, wisdom, egalitarianism, and altruism more fully, or we perish from the failure to do so. So tonight, we can look at globally, what does this look like? And tonight, we can also look at personally, what does this look like? And where is that interconnection?
So we'll talk more about that. Can you share actually some of the details so people know if they'd like to attend the event tonight?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Tonight, the box office opens at 5 p.m. We will be selling tickets from 5 p.m. until about 6:45. And the doors open at 6 o'clock. The event is held at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral over on Northwest 19th Street. We are actually co-sponsored in this event with the Center for Spiritual Development, which is part of Trinity Episcopal Cathedral. And we're very excited about this partnership. The Center for Spiritual Development, while founded in the wisdom teachings of Christianity, is also a very open-minded congregation, and they bring speakers such as Robert and Michael and other people, Sufis and all kinds of different religions and backgrounds come to Trinity to give these talks. So it's really great to, again, find another interconnection in our community with a more Christian faith-based organization, but still that availability for us to all share together tonight.
And that's the place actually where they also have the labyrinth, which is open certain times to the public to make that walk, and kind of relates to what you're saying about many different paths, but sometimes leading to that common place of kindness.
Yes. And tonight, we are also selling VIP tickets to the event. So if you purchase a VIP ticket, you can be part of the VIP reception, which happens in the room that has the labyrinth. So you could also see the labyrinth tonight.
Ah. And what's the website?
The website is BeckwithThurmanEvent.com.
Now I can see that you are, and having, you know, met and talked a little bit about this, that you are beaming, really, going about this event and really about the impact and the inspiration that you've gotten from working with these gentlemen. Tell us a little bit about your path and what brought you here.
When I was 20 years old, I had my first boyfriend. We had been dating for a couple of years. And this really is what brought me to this moment in my life. When we broke up, he gave me a copy of the Tao Te Ching. And the first line of this book was, "The truth that can be spoken is not the eternal truth." And it was the first time in my life I read something that went all the way into my heart and made me wake up and say, "Oh, what's this? What? Oh, I had been raised Episcopalian, and it had never really resonated for me in this way." So that was my first introduction to Eastern religious thought. And a few years later, when I was in graduate school, I met a wonderful, wonderful spiritual friend. His name's Michael. And one day I said to him, "Mike, how is it that you are so peaceful?" And he was also so humble, and he looked down and, oh, Heather. And and then he said, well, I meditate. And I said, really? What? Huh? Hmm? And then I went down to a Soto Zen Priory with Mike and began a meditation practice. And for 5 years, I practiced regularly and found this real awakening in myself. Then I branched out into other avenues as well. And one of the big ones for me actually is dance. I have come to learn that for myself, my artistic expression is through my body and movement. And I feel that in the dance, that the universe, the spirit as I see it, it just flows into me and moves my body. I don't think. I'm not in the past. I'm not in the future. I'm fully in the present moment in my dance. Mm. So it's that coming into the present moment piece of the puzzle for me that has led me here today. I did work as the director of development for Friendly House, a nonprofit organization in Northwest Portland, for 7 years. And it was wonderful, wonderful work to know that I'm helping people in that way. And then just slowly, I felt a shift inside of me, and I knew this is such great work. It aligns with my beliefs, but my passion really would be beautiful books about creating spiritual growth, personal growth within yourself. All of my life, since the Tao Te Ching, I've been reading these books. And when an opportunity to work at Beyond Words Publishing, which of course published The Secret, has published many beautiful books of the mind-body-spirit genre, came up, I jumped on it. And I have just been enjoying my time at Beyond Words immensely ever since. So to now be planning this event on behalf of Beyond Words for two great spiritual luminaries, it just doesn't get any better for me.
I can see the glow again. Well, you know, I can relate in that sense that, you know, also very much interested in these philosophies and having read, you know, different books and different workshops and finding, you know, experiencing different modalities like dance, like yoga, like meditation. And a lot of times it does seem to come down to those, to certain similar concepts and principles about being in the moment, about sort of being present with ourselves and with others and connecting to that place, which is within us and also is connected with other people. And many people find it in different ways. And that's one of the lovely things about Portland is that's okay. You know, that mm-hmm. There's so many different wonderful communities, you know, holistic communities, spiritual communities, metaphysical, and things that maybe aren't even called that. And yet, you know, for some people it comes through surfing or through riding their bike or through gardening.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, again, many paths to really that place of peace, really, and connectedness with others. Now, you mentioned the secret, of course, you know, with and Beyond Words Publishing being involved in that. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed recently, and maybe it's because it's something I'm paying attention to and sort of my own law of attraction and what I'm attracting, but it seems like these concepts are becoming more popular, so or more accepted. So whether it's the secret or whether, you know, it's more people talking about meditation or yoga or Buddhism, et cetera, what have you seen as the trends and what might you attribute to this happening?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a couple of ideas on that. I definitely hear in the spiritual community, people say fairly frequently, okay, there is a planetary shift that is occurring now. It has been building for many years, and more people are waking up. More and more people are realizing the values of kindness and virtues and bringing them more fully into their lives. It's happening. At the same time, we're hitting a critical point planetarily. And there's this discussion of which way are we going to go? And the time is now to make that choice. So I hear that just in general so much in the spiritual community. And as far as trends go, a big one that I'm seeing right now actually has to do with how your brain works, the neurochemistry of your brain, and how that relates to meditation and spiritual practice. I'm seeing more and more people becoming interested in the fact that when you meditate, neuropathways in your brain are created that actually promote peace and an expansion of your consciousness, literally. And I think that people are especially maybe in our Western culture where we're science-based and have this rational process and whatnot, to be able to say, there is a real connection here. We are able to now look at your brain and show you that when you think negative thoughts, the neuropathways, the way that they're created is very limited and small. And when you are meditating, there's a growth of the pathways in your brain. So it's a literal expansion of consciousness. So I'm definitely seeing the interest in the neuroscience, brain chemistry aspect of spirituality and peace as a big trend and something that people are really interested in right now.
You're right. It's there's this coming together, really. And sometimes that helps, really, to have more of that kind of rational basis, if you will. And I know when, you know, as I've been exploring these areas over the years, that I was influenced initially or a while ago by Joan Borisenko, who is a neurologist or not a neurologist, but a had a PhD in neurology, and, you know, one of her books, and bringing together, talking about the science of this. And we're seeing more articles really about that now, and mm-hmm. and more application now in hospitals and healthcare and, you know, other areas where they're starting to incorporate more of these philosophies and seeing people heal mm-hmm. more and, mm-hmm. and actually seeing impact of this. And it's exciting. We don't know what could be more possible. So, and if you'd like to join in the discussion, you can call in at 503-231-8187. Share with us maybe a little bit about your path and what's led you here and what you'd like to hear more on this program. And shortly, Robert Thurman will be joining us by phone to share more of his wisdom. Now, Robert Thurman wrote the book, Why the Dalai Lama Matters, and it was interesting to read about, you know, his, you know, really kind of in some ways almost growing up with him, you know, mm-hmm. in their 20s and, you know, sharing philosophies and really staying in contact over the years. And what an amazing connection, you know, that must have been and must continue to be. Tell us, in kind of from your perspective, why does Robert Thurman matter?
Why does Robert Thurman matter? Well, he is the first ever, you know, Westerner to be ordained as a Tibetan Buddhist monk. Although he is no longer a monk, of course, he is now running Tibet House US, and his goal is to preserve the Tibetan culture. He's so important to the world because he translates ancient Tibetan texts and preserves the culture, of course, and the music and the traditions, and, you know, writes articles and, of course, Why the Dalai Lama Matters, that educate people as to what's going on with China and Tibet and why it's so important that we realize that, you know, if Tibet were to be made free, the ripple effect planetarily that could have. I mean, imagine if China changed its stance. So that would be the macro example of the micro, you know, inner freedom that we all search for. But to have that as a global example in that way would be so amazing. But if I may, I would actually like to read a little paragraph from a letter that was written by a Tibetan student in Dharamsala when my dear friend Kristen, who teaches there, found out that I would be meeting Robert. She told her students in her class, Tibetan students living in exile in India, that I would be able to give Robert letters that they wrote to him. And so yes, I'm going to do so tonight.
Please share that.
Okay, wonderful. So as Kristen says, the writers of these letters are startlingly bright, aware, alive young men in their 20s who grew up in Tibet and have only studied English for a few years after escaping into exile. So what I like about this particular quote is that Robert's book is called Why the Dalai Lama Matters. And he outlines all of the reasons. And then this young Tibetan student says to Robert in his letter, and I quote, "It seems that you have included in your book all reasons why the Dalai Lama matters, from the individual tranquility to the peace of the world. However, as a Tibetan and grew up in Tibet, I can think of another reason that is not in your book, Why the Dalai Lama Matters, and I would happily like to share it with you. As the people in Tibet don't get a chance to have proper education, they know less about politics, economy, and environment. As a result of that, they are more ignorant about everything, and they are more likely to make mistakes. However, their beliefs in Dalai Lama is unshakable, and they obey whatever the Dalai Lama says. They never doubt or question about Dalai Lama. Some people follow nonviolent strategy just because they are told to by the Dalai Lama. So, if there wasn't the Dalai Lama to give them good advice and guide them in a right way, what those people would do is out of question. I personally think this is one reason why Dalai Lama matters so much about the issue of Tibet and China. So to me, what's so touching about this is that this young man is saying, we don't get to have education anymore. However, we have this man, the Dalai Lama, whom we revere. And so even though we may not have all of the reasons and understandings, thank goodness we have this example and we see him as this pure leader. So even without all of these intellectual understandings of things, we can have right action in our life because the Dalai Lama is here. And he suggests this as yet another reason why the Dalai Lama matters. And here Robert has written this beautiful scholarly book about all these reasons. And then this young man from Tibet adds one more.
And a very important voice.
Yes.
And you'll be sharing this letter with Robert.
I will. Yes. I'll meet him today at about 2:00 for the first time, and I'm going to give him these letters.
Well, you'll have to let us know what the impact that has.
I'd love to.
And it sounds like we have one caller on the line. Joanne, welcome to the program.
Hello, this is a lovely program. I'm not asking you to help me with this. I'm just putting this out. If I could be more human, I would be crying, but not in this culture. My heart and spirit are broken in many ways, not only because of personal stuff. Excuse me, I'm being human, but in many other ways, worldwide and in this country, things like our country sending drones to Pakistan, the burning of the Quran tomorrow, and the ongoing wars that we can't stop in this country, and so many, and the rapings in Africa. And I can't go to your event because I'm low income, but I thank you for the lovely program.
Thank you, Joanne, for sharing that. And I think that's one of those challenges. You know, I went to a film last night called Playground, which is about highlights the issue of child trafficking and sexploitation. And, you know, I am a believer in sort of law of attraction, or, you know, tend to believe in these philosophies and sort of positive thinking and try to focus on the positive. And yet there are some realities, really, and try to wrestle with that. And, you know, one of the things I appreciate from the recent movie, the Buddha, the PBS documentary, which Robert appears on, is, you know, that idea that there is suffering out there. And yet, you know, we sort of do our part. And so that idea of that middle path, that of acknowledging really what is, and also just trying to find peace with that and doing what we can, doing our part. So Joanne, thank you for sharing that. I'm sure there's many others who really can feel really some of the heartfelt issues that are going on in our world. And hopefully we're at this point that maybe things can be different, maybe things can transform, and we try to have hope in that. So thank you for sharing that.
I think that there really is something that each one of us can do. Another just quick story. Kristen, actually the woman who's teaching Tibetan students in India, she went to a workshop, and at the workshop, the facilitator said, okay, I have 300 people in this room. All of you who believe that peace on earth is possible in your lifetime, move to the right side of the room. All of you who don't, move to the left side of the room. Kristen and two other people moved to the right side of the room. And the woman facilitating said, and this is why it's not possible. It is so important that each one of us find that place of peace in our own hearts. What you can do in these times is find that and know that there is interconnection. You know, according to the discoveries of Buddhist physics, all things exist only in relationship to other things. You actually exist in relationship to everything else, and it makes a difference when you in your heart, when you have peace and you radiate that out. It truly makes a difference.
Yeah, it seems like a simple concept, and yet if we all were a little bit more peaceful, then we would actually enhance increase global peace.
Right?
One person at a time, really. And it does, and impacts other people, that effect we have. So if you'd like to join in the conversation, the number is 503-231-8187, and you're tuned into Talk Radio on a Friday morning at about 8:30 a.m. here Pacific time. And we're talking about Transforming Awareness, an event that's happening, a unique event happening tonight in Portland. And shortly we'll be joined by Robert Thurman, who is one of the distinguished speakers who will be there this evening, and now talking with Heather from Beyond Words Publishing, which is one of the co-sponsors of the event. And they also are, your publishing was also very involved in, publishing The Secret. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, well, yeah, glad to. Well, The Secret has over 19 million copies in print worldwide. The woman, Rhonda Byrne, who wrote The Secret, she felt a strong calling to approach Beyond Words Publishing with her book and worked with us to do so. And of course, it's been on the New York Times bestseller list for years now. And then I think you might know that just in August, our partner company, Simon & Schuster, we in partnership published The Power, which is Rhonda's next book. So it's been interesting for me. What is it about this book? What is it about The Secret that ended up going global in this way? And you are talking about the law of attraction right now, and where we put our focus, that's what grows. I think that for so many people to be moved to purchase this book and read this book and embody the ideals of this book, you know, when we talk about, okay, so we're at a point now, which, where are we going to go? This is one example of people's interest in, let's shift towards something beautiful and good. And I think that the success of The Secret really speaks to that.
It is a powerful concept. I've seen the DVD a couple times or a few times and shared it with other people. And, you know, again, it's one of those concepts that's really, it's sort of simple, it boils down to, and yet putting into practice sometimes is challenging, really, because we are human, like your caller indicates, and we all are, and we have those moments, I know, where I think, gosh, I should know better. You know,
sure.
Why am I thinking this or that or the other? And that's all maybe sort of part of the beauty of human existence, really.
It's so true that so many times something that is the most simple is the most difficult, such as, let's be in the present moment.
Right?
Right? How simple. And yet we have so many things that are constantly pulling us out of the present moment. You know, if I have just a moment to, I'd like to mention a little something about Michael Bernard Beckwith, as Michael and Robert will be in conversation tonight. Because this reminds me of something that Michael was talking about in his book, Spiritual Liberation. He talks about how he travels the world, and he has noticed that airports have become essentially shopping malls. And he's very interested to watch people in airports. They don't really need anything. You're in the airport, but he watches their faces, and he watches them wanting to want, as he puts it. So, oh, I'm getting on a plane, and there must be something. What can I get my hands on to fill this, you know, 20-minute void that I have right now? Oh, I guess I need this gum and this magazine about celebrities. Got to know what's going on in their lives. But it's just interesting to him, I think, to see people, instead of maybe just taking a moment to rest in the not knowing, to take ease in the present moment. Instead, there's this little graspy quality we have. Fill this moment. Find something. Be entertained. I think I read somewhere that Americans are the most entertained society in the world. You know, but just imagine if instead we could take these moments in the airport and maybe just sit. Maybe let that, instead of that graspy buy something feeling, just watch that feeling and notice it, and it will pass. So there are, of course, techniques for becoming more proficient at the process of getting yourself into the present moment. And I think that that's what's going to be fun about tonight, is that Michael has his techniques and ways of viewing things for getting us more fully into the present moment, and Robert has his, and again, we'll get to witness those points of intersection.
You know, airports are fascinating places, really, I think, to kind of watch human behavior and such. And, you know, and I, though historically, I confess, I found myself like on the planes when they have those magazines of things that you could buy, and I'll flip through them. And I suddenly find myself looking at things like thinking that, oh, wow, I could use one of those, even though I had never thought about that before. But there it is. And looking out at that. So, and I kind of laugh at myself.
I know, me too.
Although I tend not to buy them. I just have that thought.
I haven't yet. But that towel warmer,
right?
You know, I mean, imagine getting out of the shower and having a warm towel. I don't know. I might need one. Oh, okay. No, I don't.
Right. They start to give you these ideas that we need things that we don't actually need. And that's, I think that contributes also to the sort of busyness of our society, is that people always feel like this need to be busy, doing something, buying something, watching something. And sometimes the idea of being still, I think, for example, Shavasana and yoga is sometimes the hardest pose for people, is just to, you know, just to lie there and not do anything.
Right.
You know, there's this need to kind of move. And yet that's where a lot of the power is, really, and just being able to be still.
Mm-hmm.
So you're listening to Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, and the number in the studio here is 503-231-8187. And we're talking about the upcoming event tonight, Transforming Awareness, here with Heather Jones of Beyond Words Publishing. And we are going to shortly take a break. And again, if you'd like to call after the break, 503-231-8187. And shortly we will be joined by Robert Thurman, sharing some of his wisdom.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. My name is Natalie Buteau, your host this morning, and we're here live in studio with Heather Jones from Beyond Words Publishing, co-sponsoring the event Transforming Awareness Tonight. And also very pleased to welcome by phone Mr. Robert Thurman, who will
be... Hi there, Natalie. How are you?
Well, thank you, Robert, and welcome to the program, and welcome to Portland.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here. There's such a wonderful state, and the people of Portland are so great and from my previous visit.
Wonderful. And, well, Mr. Thurman, the more I read about you, you know, you are just sort of a rock star in the...
I don't think so. I'm just an old scholar running around, friend of Dalai Lama's.
Right.
That's my claim to fame.
Right. Well, those of you tuning in or just tuning in, Mr. Thurman is a preeminent scholar and a spiritual leader. He's a professor at Columbia University, a prolific author, the first American to have been ordained a Tibetan Buddhist monk, a co-founder of the Tibet House along with Richard Gere, and once on Time Magazine's list of most influential Americans. And he will be speaking tonight with Michael Bernard Beckwith at Transforming Awareness here in Portland at this unique event. So, Mr. Thurman, to start with, you know, on this morning, that I know you've floating in last night from the East Coast. Tell us from your thoughts, what do you see as this moment in our world and our universe in this country? How do you see it? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities?
I'm feeling things are going well as they tend to. I think we're approaching a very good time in the country and the world, although at the moment things look terribly grim. It's always this paradox that on the inner level, at the level of people's awareness of each other and people's, you know, sort of blossoming kindness of each other, even hardship in a way helps people in that they become more sympathetic of others' hardships and so on. On that level, I think there's always positive development going on in our modern situation. But on the level of the surface of the sort of crazy people doing crazy things and sort of geopolitical things seeming to go wrong and dangers occurring, it's kind of grim, actually. So there's always this kind of tearing paradox in the middle of life that at the level of human heart to heart of people, I think things do improve. And then these old traditions of grim, you know, conflict keep wasting our money and our time and our energy, you know. And that's the way I'm always caught in that, you know. On the one hand, I feel very good about how things go. On the other hand, I deplore the sad fact, failure of some, actually often leadership people, like failing to catch up, you know. Like this thing in Florida about that guy, Reverend Jones, or Pastor Jones, who is going to burn some Korans. And then, but you know, he's blamed, but he's just a little bit deranged. You know, people are blaming him, and people are calling him up and saying he's going to cost lives of our troops, which, of course, he is. But the point is he doesn't do it alone. The vulture media is the one. I know we're on the radio, and I love the media, too. But I think there's a tendency in the media to just go for ratings, and never mind. So they are the ones who are giving him this huge megaphone, you know, to create distress around the world and to cause terrible reactions in the Muslim communities. If they just, you know, ignored him, and then he could go and burn whatever he wants in his front yard, no one would pay any attention. It would not be an international crisis. And so this kind of thing, of course, we you know, just because we're happy about the transforming of the people on the individual level, doesn't mean we can't speak out about what we see as wrong on the larger level, you know, on the national level, on the public level.
Right, and we were talking a little bit about the law of attraction, and you know, you have a good point that sometimes something negative happens, and then the media and others draw more attention to it, and then that makes it bigger, really.
Yes, like, you know, we could be talking ourselves with all of these so-and-so's lists and CNN and NBC. We could be talking about transforming awareness, and instead they're all just jumping all over again and again and again and dropping in that thing. And so naturally, people in foreign countries, Muslims in foreign countries who don't know the American society very well, they assume that all America is behind this, you know, and then it becomes like a real affront to them, and then they have a freak out, you know. It's really unfortunate, you know, because you basically, you know, like mass murderers or weird people who do suicide things, you know, to you know, if they didn't get publicity, it would be a lot less of that sort of thing, you know. But they are seeking, you know, their moment of fame, and that's really what's really, really unfortunate, that we don't have some sort of etiquette. I'm not talking about rules or laws. I'm talking about a kind of etiquette in the media that they would see the negative consequences of making it so public, and they would do something. That would be enlightened and transformed of them.
How can we transform our awareness individually and on a more global level?
Well, the way of transforming, I think, is to slow down one's pace in life, which, of course, I'm very guilty of being a little bit too rushed around, too busy. But anyway, one slows one's pace down, and one takes stock of what's around one and counts one's blessings. You know, it's usually we're just rushing for the next thing. We achieve something, and then we immediately put it aside because we rush for another one. And we're sort of trained like that to be competitive and high-performing and achievement-oriented. You know, that's part of our culture. But to transform awareness, the key thing is to ease back from that and look more carefully within ourselves and see where we have something good going, and not just deal in sort of frustration of challenges and challenges all the time. And then especially pay attention to our friends, our loved ones, if our loved one, you know, even our pets, you know, and just count that blessing as you stroke the back of a pet, you know, or say something nice to a loved one, or give a hug to a child, or whatever it is that is close to you, and or work a little in one's garden, or do something different. And this way, one realizes it isn't so much as sort of creating a new awareness, although there is a learning aspect, you know, reading and learning new things, and as taking stock of the awareness we already have that we normally suppress because we're rushing ahead so hard. You know, I think that's the key. That is a very, very key thing. The counting of the blessings, seeing the glass half full, and then slowing down and stopping the forward rush and taking a look at where one's foot is planted at this moment, you know. That's the way of doing it, getting things down to here, because in a way, we're always in the present. You know, in one way, you can't find the present. It keeps eluding us. It keeps slipping away. And in another way, we're always in the present. And so to be, while in the present, to always be focused on something you're going to get in the future or something you're going to do in the future is depriving yourself of the reward of being here. You know, so I think those are very key elements, I think, that everyone teaches. It's nothing special, really. Everyone knows that in their bones, you know, but we're just distracted by so many things and we rush after them and we miss that point, you know.
Right. And you, you know, bring up a good point that sometimes it doesn't take these sort of, you know, specific practices like meditation and such, which, you know, certainly are very helpful, but sometimes those moments can happen really in everyday life, like you said, with a loved one or with a pet. We have a couple callers on the line joining
okay.
us now.
Okay. Is there a caller on the line? Oh, good.
Hi.
Hello, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Barely, but I can hear.
Oh, nice. I'm a Portlander. I'm going through a very tough situation right now. My husband is in jail. But I wanted to ask about kids. What's the best awareness modeling or the best teachings I can do with my kids? I have a three-year-old daughter. She's almost three and a little baby. What's the best modeling I can do?
Well, I think that it sounds like you're focused on it. You're having these great difficulties on some levels, but you're aware of the beauty and the wonder of your child, and you're extending your love to the child and hopefully also to the husband and to whatever it is. You're sort of making the best of the situation, in other words, which is the great art to do, especially when it's such a hard situation. My heart goes out to you. But that's the best thing. And then to sort of hope if there's anybody who is causing this, if there's some problems that some people who are pursuing, or there's like enemy involved type thing, the thing is not to just get locked into being resentful and angry. Anger is so destructive that to oneself, the person who is angry, is really, really destructive. It's like somebody harms us, and then we're upset by that, and we're hurt by it. But then when we sit and be angry and resentful about having been harmed, it's like doubles the hurt. So there's a practice to sort of think of, well, okay, this has happened. I'm not going to give the enemy the satisfaction of being upset about it on top of having been hurt. I'm just going to nurse my wound and try to make the best of it, try to heal myself and heal those around me. But I'm not going to, like, give the enemy the double satisfaction of having hurt me once, and then I hurt myself twice by being angry. I think that's a very important thing. You know, bitter and resentful at the world doesn't help, you know.
Yes, I read it, Anderson. Thank you.
It sounds to me by the quiet tone of your voice and peaceful aspect of you that you are already practicing these things, so I congratulate you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
And we have another caller on the line.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm very disappointed in KBOO for giving you this forum. It's not what I expect from KBOO. But rather than say a lot of vicious and unproductive and ugly things, I'll simply ask if any of you are familiar with the writings of Barbara Ehrenreich and her book, Brightsided.
I'm not sure what the question is.
I'm not familiar. Are you familiar, or are you, Heather?
I do know about Barbara Ehrenreich's work. I've read a bit.
And what would you like to share about that, caller?
I'm not sure. It sounds upset, but I couldn't quite tell what it was about.
As far as I'm concerned, the ideas that you're expressing are very hyper-individualistic. They're very existential.
So you feel we should be angry about social problems?
Yes. And I think that's the point of Barbara Ehrenreich's book, is that we need to become more agitated. We need to become more upset. The problem in America isn't a lack of apathy. We have more apathy.
All I can say to you is that for thousands of years in our recorded history, people have becoming more upset with each other about this and that. And it seems to create an endless cycle of violence and disturbance, and doesn't seem to help. Like, they were great proletarian revolutions 100 years ago to right all the wrongs in societies, and what happened was leadership emerged that was even worse than the old czars and kings and so forth, and they were even more nasty because they weren't even brought up to be kind to anyone, because then they got to their positions by violence and anger. So, I mean, that's a good point, you know, and actually there is a way of being active and being engaged and doing something about injustice and suffering and so on without anger. And being also compassionate for the people even who are doing the evil deeds, and rather than angry with them and then seeking to destroy them or something like that, which is the agitated way. So I don't know Barbara's work, but and I'm sure that she's right that we shouldn't be too complacent. But I doubt if she's advocating anger and hatred, because there are many studies, scientific studies, that prove that when people are upset in that way, what they do is ineffective, because their judgment is bad, and usually it leads to violence, and violence usually makes everything worse. So that's all I can say, but, you know, you make a point, and...
I could have heard your argument.
And that's your point. So, good. I'm not angry with you.
I appreciate that.
I hope you're not angry.
I could have heard that idea expressed on Fox News. I could have heard the comments about the proletarian revolutions expressed on conservative talk radio. Why am I hearing this on KBOO? It's very hurtful and very disappointing.
KBOO, as you may know, is a place that really is open to a diversity of voices, and of course not everybody's going to agree with everything that's on, and so that's what we're here to do, really, is to present that and just, you know, perspective here. So thank you for calling in and for sharing that.
Thank you.
Mr. Thurman, having spent many years in the company of the Holiness Dalai Lama, can you share with us some of the wisdom, really, that you've encountered over the years?
You know, the Dalai Lama thinks similar to the way I do, and he's my teacher, after all, and I have learned a great deal from him. The key, very key thing in Buddhist discipline is to try not to be angry, and to, you know, forgive them for the... I think Christianity has that element, you know, forgive them for they know not what they do, mm-hmm. and turn the other cheek, and if they ask for your shirt, to give them your coat, and all of this. And these are all, they never say get angry and like make war and bomb thine enemy, this kind of thing. They don't say that. And as far as conservative talk radio goes, I don't think conservative talk radio promotes peacefulness. They very much want to get this person and that person, and they very much pump up fear, you know. And fear is not useful in the sense of in public, you know, it's used to oppress people, actually. So Dalai Lama teaches along those lines, and he is someone who certainly walks his talk in the sense that the Tibetan people have been ignored by the world, actually. They have not been, people have not been upset enough about the genocide that the Chinese communist government is perpetrating in Tibet in order to keep the great land of Tibet, which traditionally was not their land, and which they invaded and annexed, you know, and are occupying with troops and so on, and settlers. And yet he doesn't hate the Mao, and he doesn't hate the communists, and he appeals to them constantly to realize that their own self-interest is better served by being more peaceful and doing try looking for a win-win in the situation rather than oppressing and taking away and depriving others, you know. And so that's an amazing example to the world, to a world that is completely sunken in violence. The things that my friend who called in is probably very upset about are the great poverty here in the world, the destruction of our economy by greedy corporations, you know, and the outsourcing of all our jobs, you know, to sort of countries with very poor people in them. And I'm sure, and the cost of the wars, and I'm sure he's very upset about that, and I am too. And of course, but those wars are kept going by anger and fear, and there's a terrible enemy. And, you know, we don't have time to fix the roads and the bridges and the poor people and the ghettos and the neighborhoods and to stop the unjust laws that put too many people in prison for nothing and the bad justice system. We don't have time for that because we have these other enemies. We have to be really scared, and we have to go out and do a lot of security. So we have to have a huge army and spend trillions invading other people's countries and so on. I mean, the anger thing, when blown up, you know, by the mass mind through the media, is genuinely destructive. And we, I think, have to learn to really try to respond peacefully to each other.
I saw you recently appearing on the PBS documentary, the Buddha, a very fascinating story, and hearing, you know, your thoughts and the Dalai Lama's thoughts, and then, of course, the stories of
and the... And Michael Beckwith, my colleague in today's event, is very good on this, and he comes out of the Christian tradition, but he's a universalist. He doesn't... exclusively, you know, he doesn't make a division in a way that some more fundamentalist people do. And he's a wonderful teacher, actually, and he's, of course, struggled up through society in a difficult way and done very well and helps a lot of people. So I'm very happy to be working with him later in the day.
How do you suggest that people find that balance, really, between recognizing the realities of the world and doing something about it and also then... finding that inner
peace? The key thing that is taught, actually, there was a great master in ancient India known as Shantideva, his name, and he gave this wonderful instruction, which is that what makes us angry is when we see something happening that shouldn't be happening, or when something that we want to see happen that we think would be good for people is being frustrated or blocked. And so what he says is when you can do something about a situation, you should actively do it. And in that sense, I think I agree with what Barbara Ehrenreich really means, that we should be very engaged and active, and we shouldn't just sort of hide in our own security situation or something, or our own comfort, and we should get out and try to help people who are really being under the gun. And I completely agree with her on that. But his argument is, you do it when you feel uncomfortable about what you see is happening, and you don't wait until you blow up in anger. In other words, be active before you get angry while you're still calm and your judgment is good and your sense of humor is still functioning, and that's the way to do it. And if you can't do anything about it, for if some issue that you cannot get anything done about, then don't be angry on top of being helpless, you know. Just think about how you can do it, about pick a small corner, do something in a baby steps way, you know, try to do something in another direction about another problem. But above all, don't let anger take you over. His anger is tricky because it makes you think that you're stronger than you actually are, and then makes you act carelessly and destructively, and then you actually, you know, it's ineffective, therefore. There's many studies that show that, you know. And yet you can be vigorous, and you can be even forceful, and you can say very strongly what you think, like the nice gentleman who called. He strongly disagreed with something. He expressed it. That's really wonderful. And but if he allowed himself to get angry, if he's unhappy now and angry and all this and upset, then he's not doing himself or anybody any good.
This is the challenge and the beauty of human existence, right?
Mm-hmm. I love that of the Shantideva. You know, why be upset if you can do something about it? Do mm-hmm. it. And if you can't, why be upset on top of it?
Makes me think of the Serenity Prayer and knowing when is the time to make change and when is the time to not. So any other last sort of thoughts that you want to leave us with? I know the conversation will continue tonight at the event.
Okay.
As we wrap up this program, anything else you'd like to share?
Okay.
Oh,
hello?
So we'll continue the conversation tonight. Again, Heather, the details of that at the Trinity Cathedral this evening.
That's right, in Northwest Portland. Doors open at 6 o'clock. We'll begin selling tickets at 5. We're going to close the doors at 7 because we're filming this event, and I think it's going to be a really beautiful evening. It's great to meet you, Robert, and I look forward to meeting you in person a little later this afternoon.
Okay, great.
Likewise, on the website, Beckwith Thurman Event.
Okay.
Yes. So thank you for joining us, and thank you to our callers for calling in, and thank you to everybody for tuning in. This has been Talk Radio with your host this morning, Natalie Buto, and thank you to our guests, Heather Jones and Mr. Robert Thurman. And again, thank you for tuning in and for being part of this transformation that's happening in our world. Have a good day.